Welcome back to A New Sound with me, Morgan Brown. This week, we're talking to Cool Hand Jax, and on my special, I have a special guest for this. Niall McCarthy's here.
Hello, how is it going, dude?
Hey, man.
I was just jamming out to that sick intro, dude.
Remember when you played bass on that?
Dude, I do. Do you remember when you played guitar on that?
I do.
Dude, we killed that.
We crushed it. Remember when your brother played drums on that?
Dude, oh my goodness. And Nick Biazzini played on it?
I think it was just me, actually. I think it was just me. We're not going to give Nick any credit.
Okay. It was also it was just us going into the studio and you saying, "Oh yeah, also we're going to play this
jingle."
And we're like, oh, "Okay." And then we like did it in like a take.
Well, you know Kevin wrote it.
Did Kevin write it?
Kevin wrote it. That's an old Parkside song.
Is it really?
It is. Then I asked him. I said, "Hey, can I use this for my jingle cuz I like that guitar lick?"
I mean, it's sick.
But I think it's better as a jingle than it is anything else. Even Zach Bloomstein, who recorded it, was like, "I might use this in other things if you give me permission." I'm like, "Word." But we're talking about Cool Hand Jax.
Yeah,
your friend Jake.
Yeah, my good friend Jake Wiseman, aka Cool Hand Jax, aka
Cool Hand Jake.
Cool Hand Jax.
I know, I'm just joking.
Oh,
Jake is his name.
Yes, well, yeah, that's where it comes from, I assume.
I assume too.
I assume. I don't know the entire etymology, but yeah, dude, he's the cutest man in Amherst.
We can't even talk about how attractive he is.
I know. I'm sure you got into it.
You'll hear on the episode, we actually talk about, he complimented both of us.
Dude, I'm only in bands with people who are cute. I mean, it's just worked out that way.
That's
not
a really good rule, if I'm being honest.
It's not a rule. It's just been coincidence, you know?
I think you should make it a rule now. Just no uggos in bands with you. You can't do it.
I guess so.
But no, so what was your first experience meeting Jake and starting, like, because I know you weren't an original member of Sunshine Brothers, but you became, but you joined it. What was that experience like for you and like meeting Jake and stuff?
So I knew John from Sunshine Brothers, the drummer, because we were in jazz band together, and I somewhat knew Charles through jazz. We hadn't really played together, but their old bassist, they had been playing with Tony for I think a year or two, and he left and they needed a new bassist. So then John knew me through jazz band. He was like, "Just come and practice with us." And I'd never met Jake at this point, and so I just showed up to practice, and then I see this guy. It was in his bedroom, our first practice, and all of our practices were in his bedroom. Terrible isolation, but really cool. Like very, really cold.
Very cold.
Very cold room.
All of Amherst is freezing for some reason.
You've only been there in the winter. That's why.
That's true.
But no, I mean, like immediately I was blown away by just like, first off, his creativity. Like Sunshine Brothers, I loved it so much because I had to do like none of the heavy lifting. Like Jake wrote the songs, he like booked the gigs, he would do all the like promotional stuff. Like it was his brainchild for Sunshine Brothers, and then I just got to come in and play some bass lines and like got like a quarter of the money on gigs, and I'm like, "This is great."
No, I feel that.
I did not put in a quarter of the effort, but I got paid.
And we were also talking, when Jake and I talk later, which we talk about visuals a lot.
Yeah.
And it was so funny to me because I feel like I obviously knew that you were doing Sunshine Brothers. I knew that was a band that you were in.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize like how cool the music videos were and how for some reason you always have to be shirtless in every music video. Is that also a running thing with you in your life?
I mean, I don't think it's something. It's not something he said that I needed. It's something that I just kind of was like, "This feels right," you know?
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to show it. I don't know. I think after quarantine, I'd be less inclined to be shirtless, but just in terms of weight that's been put on.
You know, it seemed like making those music videos were mad fun.
Oh,
it seems like it was
fun.
A really good time.
Yeah, it was. And he's just like one of those. Yeah, he totally has like an idea of like everything he wants to do. Be like, "I want this shot here, this shot," which is awesome because I love just being like, I don't want to think about any of that stuff. You know me.
Yeah, it's very true.
I'll just show up at a bowling alley or something and then be told to take some B-roll.
I wish this podcast was sponsored by Rabs. I wish.
Oh,
but they have not returned my calls.
Rabs, not Long Island. Staten Island is the only real borough.
That's very true.
Those
are not my words. I want that to be very
those
clear.
Are my words. That is the podcast's words.
But now, okay, so now you're working with Jake. You're doing Sunshine Brothers. Uh-huh. You guys are getting very, like, you guys had a pretty good amount of success with Sunshine Brothers in general.
Yeah.
But then now he's doing Cool Hand Jax. Like, what was your perspective for, like, him transitioning to this new music? Obviously, I know we both very much enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I was super pumped. I was obviously, like, sad that he wasn't in Massachusetts anymore, so I could see him and play with him as much. But it's like also super exciting. Like this past year, all like the EP and like all the music videos he's put out. I think he's put out 4 music videos, and each one of them is like so different. And so it's been like a highlight of my 2020, like when I get to see like what he's been up to, and just like seeing him kind of go for it in California
for sure,
you know, and for like sure. actually, you know, succeed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
it's pretty exciting.
It's nice to see when you're like, it's nice to see when your friends actually
exactly.
do succeed, because you're like, oh, that's sick.
Yeah, and no, it's been really fun supporting. I don't know.
And he deserves it, man. He's working his ass off.
Also, he's just like such an amazing person, you know, like super just like caring and kind and intelligent. Like, we've shared many a car ride back from and to gigs, and just like, I don't know. I feel like you just really get to like see who a person is when it's just you two is on the road, just like, all right, what are we going to talk about?
True. Well, I'd hate to know your impression of me then.
No, it's a good impression. It's like my impression of you from road trips is, oh, he's insane and I love him.
Okay, good. That's the most people's come out for me.
Yeah. But no, just like such an awesome dude. And like he has worked so hard, I think, and just like deserves like everything that he gets, you know?
I'm happy that we really support you, Jake. You're incredible.
Yeah. And we love you, Jake.
And here is my interview with Jake, a.k.a. Cool and Jax. Take a listen. And thank you, Niall, for being on the intro.
Of course. I hope I didn't mess it up.
You absolutely did not. Thank you so much again. And here is my interview with Cool Hand Jax. Awesome. Cool. So you're recording your end, and then I got my end going. We're great. This is awesome.
Cool.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for doing it.
No worries. Thank you so much for meeting up with me virtually. So so something I also do with very specific episodes, I'll have like a guest intro, and Niall is doing that this week. So he wanted me to say hi.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. So.
I'm excited.
But yeah, no. So you're originally from Mass. You're originally from Springfield, right?
Springfield, yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
And you're from Braintree.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I'm one of the I'm one of the Braintree kids in like that South
cool.
Shore area of like Mass stuff.
Word.
So now when you started, I wanted to like start back with Sunshine Brothers and like your
yeah.
like everything that you started with, because well first off, you're Cool Hand Jax, otherwise known as Jake. And I was obviously like, I became aware of Sunshine Brothers when Niall started playing in the band, and like when like
yeah.
everyone like met each other at Northampton and like in Amherst and stuff.
Yeah.
But going from that, what was like the very beginning? Cause the first album came out in 2017, right?
Yeah. 2017 was the first EP. So yeah. Thank God for Niall too, you know, just let that go on the record. But, so Tony, who was our original bass player, who Niall ended up replacing. Tony and I had been playing music since I was 14. So when I was a freshman in high school, I met Tony through another friend, and he was a couple years older. But there wasn't that many musicians in Springfield, West Springfield, at least like people that were like playing instruments. And Tony was like one of the few, so we kind of just were like, all right, we both, you know, have instruments and like to play, like we might as well try and do something. And he also, like, it was super rare, I'm sure it was similar in Braintree, like super rare to have like just a full band set up in your house, you know, like drum kit.
Oh
like,
yeah, everyone definitely needed something else at some point or another, and it was
yeah.
always the hardest part to like find the where to practice. It was always whose parents had the most endurance, I think.
Yeah, that too. So we were lucky because Tony had like all this stuff. His parents didn't really care, or that maybe they did, but like they let us play. So Tony and I started playing music, and we probably had like four or five different like band names, like projects throughout high school. And they were all like, you know, some of them might have been okay, but they were all pretty bad. And like, but it was fun. Like we were just doing it for fun, and we were learning how to record and write songs or whatever. But when I got to UMass, you know, I sort of like became involved in that scene. And it was cool to, like, for the first time, be around people who were playing shows all the time, like other kids and stuff.
Well, I think the UMass music scene in general is extremely diverse as well. Like, I feel like there was, like, so many different types of bands and people that, like, specifically go to Amherst. Whether it be, like, metal kids or jazz kids or, like, indie rock, like, Half Astronaut and, like, stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's just a ton of stuff. So that was all so new at the time. Like, I didn't really know anyone my age who was, like, playing in a band, you know? I guess there was, like, one other group in my high school that was making songs. But besides, you know, it was pretty few and far between. So to, like, go to a place that just had, like, this explosion of musicians doing stuff.
Well, also, I think it was also interesting for us over in, like, the Braintree and the South Shore, because we were and are so close to Boston.
Uh-huh.
That I feel like maybe we had a, like, I know that there were like really big bands from our areas, and there was like bigger, like, I'm not saying bigger, but a lot more opportunity to maybe like play music or anything. Like, was there a lot of that in Springfield when you first started, or was it just like very bare bones?
Not really. So I went to West Springfield High School, and like even the music department there like was pretty much non-existent. Like, I think there was one music teacher, and, like, he just, like, wouldn't show up ever, and he got in trouble. Like, there just wasn't that much of an emphasis on it, you know?
No, totally.
I think just on the arts really in sucks. General. And, like, yeah, there just wasn't too many. I don't know. I think there was, so, Springfield and, like, Western Mass in general, I guess, like, lower Western Mass towards Connecticut, had definitely, like, a prolific, like, metal scene. I want to say, like, earlier 2000s and then maybe, like, early 2010s, like, Killswitch Engage, I think All That Remains, Stained, obviously, were all, like,
you can't forget Stained, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So there was, like, that, but those people were old, you know, they were all way older than, like, you know, 15, 20 years older than me. So, and I really liked that stuff when I was in, like, middle school, but I eventually just didn't.
But it was... It was so weird. So when I was like deep diving through just like the very like, because they're for a band that not going to say wasn't around for like a little bit, because I'm sure you guys are also very close. And I feel like there is possible Sunshine Brothers Inc. music in the future, maybe. But
yeah.
I feel like it was so hard pinpointing a quote unquote genre for that band, because it seems like the influence was so all over the place. Like, sometimes it was like very 1970s post rock, surf rock kind of thing, but also sometimes like the ambient and like the ambient structure and like the actual like music of itself, like with the addition of keyboards and the arrangements that you guys used, I think that's why you guys had such a great pull for people. I think that's a really cool thing, and that's like one of the reasons why I was always like, oh man, Sunshine Brothers is so fucking sick. You know what I mean?
I appreciate that. Yeah, I think we kind of like live in this, we live in a cool time for music where we are kind of in like a post-genre era, I think, where like artists are allowed to really, and I think artists have maybe always done it, but maybe it's a little more acceptable now. Like, you can just switch up a lot, like record to record, even like song to song sometimes. And you can just like try different things out, and somehow it's like not considered, I don't know, like, being too, I don't know what the criticism would be. It's not frowned upon the same way I think it might have used to have been.
Well, I think it's just, there's so much more out there. Like, the discovery of Spotify and the discovery of different music and different people doing different things. And especially, like, Northampton and Amherst is one of the most, like, collaborative places I've ever seen. I feel like everyone there is so chill, at least from my perspective of visiting.
Yeah. No, people are pretty nice out, I think, in Western Massachusetts. I think, yeah, and for Sunshine Brothers, it was like in high school, like we were making, Tony and I were making the weirdest shit like we could think of, because it was, you know, that's what we wanted to do. Like, we were really into like Beck's earlier albums and like Funkadelic and like, I don't know, just like kind of like sonically weird shit, but kind of like bordering on, definitely like those rhythmic components we really liked, but also like psychedelic, like harmony components we really liked. So I think Tony and I were always making weird stuff, and Sunshine Brothers took some of that like weird experimentation or what was like working out of it, and then also just like demos I was making that were a little bit more like, you know, like indie rock, sad. It was kind of like, you know, it was like lo-fi bedroom pop, but like before it became,
before the boom, like, yeah, before like the real big boom of it,
yeah, and became like this more like commercialized, like pop centric version of that, you know. It was more on like the psych side, I guess, you know, when that was more of a thing, I guess. But yeah, so I think we took those elements, and I would write songs, and Tony would, you know, do certain things with them, and eventually it just became, it was also developed very much through like playing live, you know, like,
well, I feel like, yeah, specifically with everything that Sunshine Brothers was doing, it feels like you guys took off, not saying fairly quickly, but it definitely grew where you were able to tour a good amount of time, and you were able to do a lot of shows and have a lot of connection. So, and I feel like playing live, maybe, how different was it than the actual process of writing songs? Was it its own beast because you couldn't necessarily do what you could do in the studio, or like vice versa?
So I think at first, like, you know, Sunshine Brothers was sort of born out of a demo I made for To Make You Feel, which is on the Sunshine tape. And this other demo for a song named Get Out, which we actually recorded but never released under Sunshine Brothers. And those were like kind of the two demos that I was like, this is going to be a new project. You know, I think I like this. I like the sound I have now. Let's work with these songs. And I think that it started off that way. And then it was like, okay, let's turn these songs live. But at a certain point, probably not too far in even, it just became, because we had been playing together for over a year before our first single came out, and like a year and a half by the time the Sunshine tape was released, and the songs were, you know, a year and a half old, 2 years at some point. But I think at a certain point it became like, okay, we're really comfortable playing live. Like, I think I just developed this like sense of what worked in a live setting, at least like for our crowd and like the people we were around, and like what was exciting for us, what was exciting for the crowd. And that started to influence the songwriting, you know, that started to be like, okay, I'm going to put this section in this song because I think this is going to be really fun live, you know, and I think people are really going to like that, and we're going to really like that.
Yeah. Cause some of the stuff you guys do, it like, it gets like, again, for me, as just a very basic, like, I always, when, like, me doing music with everything else, it was very chord-based, very, like, live-based, trying to, like, create the most fun environment. But you guys added such a cool prog element to some things where, like, it wasn't clearly just you as a great musician, but the fact that the band was working so cohesively really,
yeah,
meshed together, you know what,
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they're super talented. Everyone I was able to play with in Sunshine Brothers. And I think it was fun for us to kind of like push limits. And we definitely tried to do like the whole, you know, like absurdity thing sometimes. Like we just mix mash a bunch of random covers and stuff in there. And then like key changes or push like certain time things certain ways, you know. And it just also came down to the virtue of like, we lived together for 2 years, you know, me and John and Charles, who were in the band. I never lived with Niall. And we're always like close by. So it was easy to like sort of like work things out and rehearse pretty frequently. And it was just like the time, you know, we didn't have to worry about like renting a space or like, so it was, and we were playing all the time, you know, probably just about every weekend at certain points. So it was like, it was very easy to like see what was working, see what wasn't, see what we could work in. and what would be exciting and fun. And I think that at least for Jerry, which was our follow-up EP, the last song we released, like, those songs were definitely all written with, or almost all of them were written with, like, the live setting in mind. Like,
I could totally tell after, like, going through everything, because I really, there were a lot of points with Jerry, specifically with, like, So Bad to Me, that feel, they, like, you capture the essence of the show within, like, the actual track.
Yeah.
And the visuals that go along with it, like, obviously the three or four music videos you put out for that thing. I definitely want to, I have so many questions visually later for the Cool Hand Jack stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
but
sure.
It's so cool that you developed, like, your early sense of, like, a visual art form with Sunshine Brothers and how it led into the environment that you were in, specifically in the Northampton area, and how it really played into actually, like, creating the music, you know?
Totally. Yeah, I think that the live, I mean, those songs were also all recorded, or five of the six of Jerry were recorded in, like, a, like, as a live band, you know, in, like, a real studio setting. So it channeled that way. And we had been playing them, you know. That's what's very different with the Cool Hand Jack stuff now, too, is that with Sunshine Brothers, it was like, you know, I'd write a song, bring it to the group, we work on it a little bit, and then we play it out, and then we say, okay, you know, this worked, you know, when we played it live, this didn't. And we would just sort of tweak things over, you know, months. So really, like, the final recordings for three of those songs, maybe four of those songs on Jerry, were, like, after months of playing the songs out and being able to, like, fine tune each element, figure out what we liked, so on and so forth, which is a hard thing to be able to do, to, you know, be able to, like, try new songs out like that, I think, because usually people don't have the luxury of having the time to do that, or, like, maybe you're some high profile band who's not allowed to do that because you're not allowed to tease new music or whatever it is. So we were in a good spot to be able to, you know, just be like, okay, let's try this song out. Oh, it sucked. Nobody liked it. All right, whatever. We don't have to play that one. Like, you know?
Yeah. No, it seems like you, it, I don't know, like, hearing about, like, well, it was always like, oh, Niall, can you come do the show? It's like, oh man, I got Sunshine Brothers. And I'm like, you know what? Honestly, that's sick. Like, I can't even be mad at you because that band's fucking tight. So
thanks, man. Yeah.
But, like, it seems like you just came from, like, such a, like, everyone who knew about Sunshine Brothers just really supported you guys.
And, like, yeah, I hope that's true.
Like, you were like inviting them to the party. You know what I mean? And everyone was having fun.
I think it was, like, you know, it came down to, like, we came, when we started out at, in UMass, you know, there was, like, sort of this scene that was established, you know, bands like Calico Blue, if I don't know if any of these names.
Yeah, no, I did. I played a show with them, actually. Yeah, we played on our tour.
Calico Blue, Petting Zoo, who else was around? I don't think Spirit Ghost was playing too many shows at that time for whatever reason. Shakuski, Wide Eyed, kind of these, like, Valley, you know, not even UMass per se, but, like, Pioneer Valley bands that were, like, playing around on the scene, and that's what the shows I was going to, and there was definitely, like, it was a gatekeepy vibe, I think, to an extent, and I, you know, I'm not really good at navigating those things, like, in terms of, like, I don't know, I can be bad at sort of, like, butting in and, like, trying to, like, put myself in certain positions, but there were some other kids who were freshmen at the time, you know, when I was a freshman, that were, like, putting on other shows for sort of this, like, new group of kids, like, for the freshmen, you know. There's actually a collective at the time called Black Sheep Collective, where a few friends of mine started throwing shows in, like, classrooms and stuff. And it was just sort of, most of the people who went were, you know, kids who were new to UMass and weren't really plugged into that scene that existed. And it was sort of like a counterpart. It wasn't really a fuck you to, like, the existing whatever scene.
Right, right,
But that was, you know, sort of the vibe was like, okay, like, we, you know, if you don't want to put our bands on your bills, then we're going to throw our own shows, and, like, people will still come because, you know, people are going to like the music. And eventually that became a thing. And then, you know, the bands that were already playing were like, okay, no, those shows seem cool too. So it sort of all merged, you know. And I think Sunshine Brothers, started playing at a time when that merging was happening. So we were just, it wasn't like we had to like, I guess, fight super hard all the time to be like allowed to play certain places where people maybe wouldn't have let new bands play. It kind of came at the serendipitous merging of those two worlds. And then eventually, you know, as you move on, your friends start moving into houses and their friends do, and then they want their basement to be played at, et cetera, et cetera. So it all just sort of grows organically.
I think the basement scene in Amherst is one of the most fascinating things about that whole environment. Like, obviously, like, Dad City specifically with, like, I've been there so many, I was there a couple times to see shows and everything. But yeah, no, the Amherst scene was wild. And I think you guys had a really great experience and grew a lot of really good fans from just working. Like, I think that's like the biggest takeaway. You just got to play shows constantly, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that we never went into it with, we wanted people to like it and we wanted to play shows. And I think that if there's anything I learned from the experience, you know, is just like, it's important to, obviously, you know, you should try and be as tight as possible and you should try and sound as good as possible and et cetera, et cetera. But I think if you're having fun, you know, then the audience will generally be having fun, you know?
Absolutely.
And you can't really fake it. It's just got to be like, if you really just are enjoying yourself, then people will enjoy themselves.
I couldn't agree more, man.
Yeah.
But now, so Sunshine Brothers starts to die down, and just because I think me and you, we've always had like three layers of separation just via some friends. So there was this lore of Jake and this trip and leaving Massachusetts.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? Like, I always consider like the end of Sunshine Brothers era was, yes, like later in like what, 2018, 2019?
We played our last like big sold out show on February of 2019.
That's right. And then you went on a road trip. And that's when the Cool Hand Jacks era of
sort
of
began.
Kind of started. Yeah. So what was that trip? And give me detail, because it sounds like such a weird, like, novel from, it, like, sounds like On the Road, you know what I mean? It sounds like some Kerouacian adventure about, like, finding yourself and creating this character of Cool Hand Jacks. But go into detail about, like, what that was like for you, specifically letting, like, leaving a band that was fairly successful and still is successful. Like, everyone still regards Sunshine Brothers, and I'm pretty sure there's no bad blood between anything, but I can understand where you mentally may have wanted to separate, you know?
Yeah. I think that, you know, with Sunshine Brothers, it was always like connecting where we were to our position in life. Like, we were able to do the things that we were able to do largely because we were students, you know what I mean? Who were able to commit a certain amount of time to it, living in a town filled with other students, or even in like a geographic area in New England, surrounded by other students at different colleges or, you know, whatever, that were putting on shows and putting on young bands. So I guess I always felt like there needed to be a threshold. You know, if Sunshine Brothers was something that I was going to put X amount of time or energy in, you know, which I love to do, you know, then it would have to be, I would have to hit like a certain threshold, or we would have to hit a certain threshold before I finish school, you know, to make it seem like it might be some kind of viable, worthwhile thing. Because in my mind, it was like, I want to make music for as long as I can, you know, and I want to see if I can do it somewhat with some financial like success or et cetera, et cetera, and see if I can survive doing it. And I think we hit, from an exposure perspective, we hit those benchmarks with, I think, you know, In Your Dreams and some of the other songs sort of blowing up towards the end a little bit on Spotify. And that was definitely like a world of like, okay, like, you know, 500,000 people are now listening to our music around the world and like reaching out, and this is exciting. But we were never able to, or I should say, I was never able to like figure out how to turn that into something a little bit more financially viable, or I don't know. There's just so many elements of it that we had missed by virtue of being a band that grew very organically, which I wouldn't trade for the world, because, you know, I loved the fact that we didn't have to ever really focus and make like a plan for how we were going to become this, you know what I mean? I like the fact that it was natural. But at the same time, I think when you don't have these sort of branding or storytelling elements in place, it can be harder later on to say to anyone who doesn't, you know the band from the scene or whatever, to say, hey, this is who we are, this is what we do. So with that in mind, as I was finishing school, which was December of 2018, 2 years ago now, I finished a semester early to save some money. I kind of had that in my mind of like, okay, what am I going to do? You know, because if I'm going to do Sunshine Brothers, then I'm going to have to stay in Western Mass or maybe Boston. And I'm going to have to, you know, keep playing shows and keep recording, and that's all fine. But like, how much of, you know, our audience is going to sort of dissipate, go back and move to X or Y to start their jobs, start their lives, go home. You know, it just felt like it would be hard to exist in the same way that we were for the past 2, 3, 4 years. So with that in mind, I thought, you know, maybe I should try something new, try something a little bit more recording based, you know, because obviously, like, if I'm going somewhere else, it's not just going to be like playing shows every weekend again, or, you know, obviously with coronavirus, that's not even possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going recording based bands is kind of the way to go right now, at least.
Yeah. And that's also where I really felt the most comfortable. And I think the songs of Sunshine Brothers that I ended up liking to record like most were the ones that I think, like In Your Dreams and Loverman and that sort of thing, where it was just me being able to sort of do everything at home and take my time and try out different stuff. So that's always where I felt comfortable. And I was making demos throughout college and the whole Sunshine Brother time as well, of songs and that I knew that maybe someday I would use for a different project or et cetera, et cetera. So anyways, to answer your question, that was the thought process upon graduating. And I had this block of time, obviously, right? Like a semester's worth of time where I didn't have to pay loans because you have the 6 month, deferral period.
Sure.
For federal loans. So I didn't have to really worry about work, and I had money saved from working in college and playing shows and et cetera, et cetera. So I was like, okay. First, I was really searching hard for a job, but it was kind of depressing. As it is now,
I mean, I feel like no one who's ever like applying for, I had to go through a year and a half of applying for jobs before I finally got one.
Yeah. So that was basically like, I remember driving one day and just like, I don't know, it must have been like October of 2018. So a couple months before I graduated, and just like freaking out all of a sudden, being like, what the fuck am I going to do? Like, you know, because nothing really seemed interesting at the point, you know. Yeah. And it's just hard. There's a cognitive dissonance when you're in school, I think, and thinking about what the real world's going to be like. And is it really going to be so much harder? Am I going to work less? Am I going to be working more than I am now? You know, just all those questions that anyone asks, I think, as they're like approaching the end of a certain period of their life.
Change is tough and change is hard, but I feel like you adapted that so well into your music, like as coming forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope so. So after that kind of like period of like panic applying to jobs and nothing working out, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm just going to take some time. I've never been to like all these places in the United States. I have a car, you know, it drives okay. I have some money saved up. Like, I don't have anywhere to be. Like, just take some time and explore a little bit. And like, if you like somewhere along the way, stay, you know? That was kind of the idea. Like, just really kind of go out there with no intention of doing anything, because like, you spent your whole life doing shit, you know? I've been working since I was like 12. And like, I don't know. I just forgot that was an option for a sec, you know? So it was nice to be like, you know, that is something that someone who's 21 years old is allowed to do.
No, absolutely. And that's a good reminder for everyone else. Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't take it. Don't take everything too seriously. Cause I know when people say like, oh, you're going to work the rest of your life. Like, they mean it.
They do.
Like, it, just have fun when you're young and fuck around. You know?
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. So I took that leap of faith, I guess. And once I decided I was going to go and when I was going to go, then I was like, okay, well, we need one last Sunshine Brothers, like, big, big show, something to, like, I don't know, something to commemorate it for ourselves and maybe for fans that are interested in whatever. So we had our big last, like, we called it a farewell for now show because it wasn't clear what was going to happen after at that point, really. And it was great over at the Iron Horse in Northampton. We actually got it shot. Someone filmed the whole thing. And I have footage, but I haven't done anything with it. So maybe I'll post it one of these days.
I think a Sunshine Brothers documentary would be pretty cool.
Yeah. If there's enough footage, that could be fun. But yeah, even just for ourselves to remember. Because, you know, it was emotional for all of us, I think, at that point. Because they're all, I mean, obviously Niall, John, and Charles are all my good friends. But besides being good friends, there's like, the way I used to think about it is like, I have my, you know, my friends and my good friends and these people that I hang out with all the time, but the people in the band, like, not only do I hang out with them all the time, but I'm traveling all these new places and we're meeting all these new people. And it's just like this shared experience, I guess, of like fun, nervousness, excitement, unpredictability, and that just really can't be replicated. And like,
well, being in a band is, it is like family. Like, I know it sounds weird, but even like Niall, James, and like Nick Biagini, and like the people that, and all the people that I've toured with, like, I've had like four different bands that I've played with constantly that all know the same song. So it's kind of like a subsystem. And you really get bonded.
You do.
There's a true bond between your car breaking down somewhere or being lost and no gas in New Hampshire, or, you know what I mean? Like, all those different bonds, like, really pair, like, you're paired for life. Like, you'll always be joking around about a lot of stuff that happened.
Yeah, no, that's real.
But then, like, now with the Cool Hand Jacks being a almost all you project, right? It's really just you're doing everything. What's that sense of, especially when you were traveling around the U.S. and you were, dude, you were driving around and you were doing other like random recordings and everything else. Like, what was that? What was going through your head mentally? Was it like an isolation thing, or like what made you create the songs that you created for the first Cool Hand Jacks EP?
Yeah. So when I was driving, I didn't have, so I brought my recording equipment and a lot of my instruments. I didn't set out with the intention of recording anything really of substance or anything particularly for like, I, like, the name Cool Hand Jacks didn't exist or whatever. It was sort of just like, let's, you know, I sort of record shit all the time, so I might as well do it while I'm driving around. And yeah, it was cool. I probably made a few dozen demos all in all over like 2.5 months, and I would either record where I was staying that night, or I would record like in different like rest stops, parking lots sometimes, just sort of whenever like inspiration struck and I had a moment. And I went DI with like all my instruments and then mic'd up for my vocals with a portable interface. So it was all pretty simple, like in terms of you know, engineering complexity. Like, I didn't, you know, it wasn't a studio setting. It wasn't even a bedroom setting. So it was very much like different atmospheres and a lot of stuff going in digitally and so on and so forth. But things were still forming in a very real way, I could tell. And a lot of the songs sort of began, when I go to write songs, I don't usually try and write them about any specific thing. It's usually like, you know, I let the words kind of come out, and then there's a lot of tweaking, and then sort of by the end, or by the end of the first verse, first chorus or something, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is what the song is about, like, that makes sense. This is where I'm at in my life, you know? So I never try and make it too contrived or forced lyrically or thematically. But so of those few dozen demos, maybe like 10 of them became like full length songs. And from them, I picked 3 or 4 to be this like first batch of songs for whatever project I was going to do, which still wasn't clear at that point. But yeah, So by the time I was back, I had these songs and I was able to record. That was like this weird limbo phase for me too, when I was back home, sort of floating between Amherst and my mom's house for a couple months. And I recorded some live drums and overdubbed some, like, you know, mic'd up guitar, et cetera, and sort of finished them off. But the whole process, you know, it probably didn't hit me fully what all the songs were about until I got to LA even, which was a few months after that even. So it's interesting, you know, sometimes you can like make things without fully analyzing them and then sort of go back and you're like, okay, yeah.
Well, I think so much floats around the actual subconscious. You know what I mean? Like the more you can take in all your environments, like actually once you spell it all out, you can kind of be like, oh, well, that's how I was feeling. You know, that's what was making me feel this way or that way. You know what I mean?
But totally.
So then why did you, was there a reason for LA specifically, or was it just to get out and get some actual sunshine?
So there's a few reasons. I have some roots here. My mom is actually from South Bay in LA County, and my dad lived here for 10 years. That's where they ended up meeting before moving back to Massachusetts. So I came a few times throughout my life and I always liked it, but never really like LA proper, usually just like sort of the outskirts where my parents were from or my mom was from. So that was one reason, having that sort of connection. Another was that when I was on my trip, I ended up staying for a week in LA, and there were some friends that I had that lived out here and some people that I had met via Sunshine Brothers, like on the internet that I met up with and so on and so forth. And I just had a really good time. And I think that the week I spent here on that trip, just the amount of fun stuff there was to do and cool people I got to meet and sort of like insight I had into a place where, like, you know, entertainment is sort of seen as more of a worthwhile pursuit than in anywhere else I'd ever been in the country, was cool to me. You know, it was sort of eye-opening, and I definitely felt a pull and a desire to be like in a place that a lot of creatives live and can survive, and so on and so forth. And also the weather and, like, you know, the lifestyle and so on and so forth. Yeah. So I guess I was intrigued by a lot of stuff, but I didn't know when I was leaving that that's what was going to happen. I definitely had it in my mind leaving, like, oh, wow, I would love to live there, you know, at least now, and see what could happen and whatever. So probably, I guess, the summer after that, which is about a year and a few months ago now, I was just kind of like, all right, what am I going to do? I thought I was going to move to New York for a bit. That was sort of my plan.
I feel like a lot of people who, like, start in Massachusetts that want to leave end up thinking New York is a slightly easier, better move because you can still go back and forth. Like, I was living in New York, but I was still going to, like, again, like, Dad City and stuff. Like, I was always commuting to see the band that was in Amherst. I was the only one who was in New York.
And New York's great. I mean, I have a lot of love for New York itself, and I was much more familiar with New York, obviously, and there's a lot of greatness there. I don't know. It just didn't work out, you know, for me in terms of money and yeah. So.
So when you release the first EP and you come up with the Cool Hand Jack's moniker, and so now how did you get involved with Spirit Goth? Because I did my research, man, and that documentary they did for you and all of the visuals you did for this record really came together in such a cool way where it really felt so organic, and it felt like it was the character of Cool Hand Jack. Like, it wasn't Jake, it wasn't Sunshine Brothers. It's its own thing entirely.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad it felt as such. So I actually, so the process was kind of weird. So when I was on my trip the first time, I had made a connection via Sunshine Brothers with someone who worked over at Live Nation. Her name is Jenna, and she did a write-up on Jerry the day it was released and made us like the Live Nation's wants to watch artists or whatever. So we had like a good relationship or whatever. And I met with her and she expressed interest in managing this next project I was doing. And I thought that was a good idea because I don't know much about, you know, the industry side, at least like at a place like LA. So I said, okay, yeah, you know, let's try that out. It was pro bono. And I was like, okay, you know, if it works out, it works out. If not, then it doesn't. So we sort of worked together at the beginning thinking about, you know, what do we want to call this thing? Like, you know, what do you want these songs to be about? What do you want? Whatever. And that in and of itself was an interesting process, but it didn't end up working out, I think, because we had like too many differences in visions. And also it can be hard to go from a place where you're sort of doing everything without thinking about it to then having to, you know, sit down and try and be a little bit more strategic about which parts of yourself you want to put forth and so on.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because when you were saying, like, it must have been a completely 180 between Sunshine Brothers' life, because everything was so on, like, so free, on the go, don't really plan, just do, opposed to this project seems extremely thought out and very strategic.
So I would say at first that was kind of, that was the approach that we were taking. And this was maybe, this was probably last fall. So I guess fall of 2019, but it didn't work out because I don't think I couldn't do it. I think in a weird way, it was like, it wouldn't be worth it to me if I was having to, you know, sort of force myself to do things that didn't feel, you know, totally organic or myself. So that relationship didn't work out. And I was sort of on my own again with these songs. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm just going to put these out independently and sort of just kind of try and emulate what I was doing with Sunshine Brothers, minus like the live element at this point, because there was no possibility of that. And then also, minus the live element, and then also just being myself, not having to, you know, worry about orchestrating four different people to project a certain like image or whatever, just, you know, just be sort of communicating only myself in this organic way. And I was sending the demos around to different labels, not necessarily even with the intention of signing with anybody. It was just sort of like let's see if like people would even like this, you know, who are actually working there, or, you know, let's see if anyone's interested just cause. And Spirit Goth ended up being interested, and I had heard about them through Vansire, which is a band from Minnesota that they put on, that I've always enjoyed. So I started talking with them, and I was skeptical at first, obviously, because I think in 2020 there's just a million reasons to stay independent and a lot of benefits to, you know, putting stuff out yourself. But I was just kind of really impressed with their demeanor and their kind of integrity in the music they put out. And I guess just to put it simply, I just really like them and who they seem to be and their character, and everything felt fair and so on and so forth. So I ended up deciding that I would work with them, and it turns out it was a good decision, so far at least.
And you have another record coming out this year.
So I have a few songs that are virtually done, but I think I'm going to wait until early next year, because I'm still gathering some visuals that I want to put together with them. And yeah, also it's only been about a month and a half now since that record, and I figured it could be worth to let it breathe. And it wouldn't be, the next thing won't be a full-length record, LP or anything like that, probably another EP. Just because I think the first record I put out, like long LP, I want it to be a little bit more cohesive and pointed with some kind of theme. So,
yeah, no. So when you're creating the actual visuals for that EP that came out, I think so many things that like stuck with me specifically, I thought the funniest thing was the James Dean concept.
Thanks.
And
yeah,
like the very specific, very LA, very like that whole concept and everything else. But then also, how do you come up with is there an actual storyline that people need to be paying attention to, or is there more of a mood / a vibe, or like what were you trying to like provoke with that record? Because it seems the visuals were so striking that there definitely needs to be other stuff underneath the surface, at least for like the three videos. And you have a video coming out next week.
Yeah, even tomorrow,
there
yeah.
it is. So this will be out, this podcast will be out, not this Friday, but next.
Okay, so last Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the songs I realized first were about, the songs were about idleness and leisure and sort of the tension between the virtues of doing nothing, but also kind of the perils of doing nothing. And I guess like that in the context of like the world that I was living in, which was, you know, on the East Coast and which most people live in, which is the sort of a hyper-productive society where your worth and the worthwhileness of everything you do is sort of based on the productivity you have and the productivity you're doing, and especially in relation to like market forces, right? It's like doing something even artistic doesn't necessarily feel worthwhile to somebody because they don't know if they can monetize it in any sort of way. And that for me sort of always slipped under the surface. You know, I never really thought about that. Like I would be reluctant to trying a new instrument or, you know, trying to learn how to paint or anything because I would feel as if the time and energy I would have put into it isn't worthwhile in the sense that it wouldn't be productive enough anytime in the near future for me to make money off of it. You know what I mean? And that wasn't even a conscious thought. I think that is something that's sort of just ingrained in us in general. And you see people who are always trying to monetize their hobbies or, you know, X or Y thing that they just like to do. And it seems harmless, but I think when I was on the road, I sort of had that shift realization where it was like, okay, well, maybe that is harmful. Maybe doing things for the sake of doing them without having this sort of like pretense about commodifying it is valuable in a way that doing something that you even like to do with this idea of making money is. Does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense. I mean, I think it's very real because I feel like every artist does struggle with that. That's yeah. So I feel I've been going through this really hard point in my life where do I even write songs and write music for like me, or do I write it for other people's approval or to get a pat on the back or anything else? And like that's like been my biggest thing. And that's why I do the podcast. It's the one thing that I do this because, for instance, when I listened to Cool Hand Jacks or Sunshine Brothers, I was like, oh, this is sick. Like, I enjoy this. I wonder what's going through his head. It's really just for me to talk to other artists and be like, hey, I think you're really cool. Explain how cool you are. You know what I mean? And that's just for me. I don't really necessarily care if anyone like is a diehard listener. That'd be cool. But at the same time, I'm doing this just because this is my true hobby. I love talking to other artists. I love talking to other people who like to create, whether that be movies, music, any kind of art I really care about. You know what I mean? I think that going through that struggle for you is extremely difficult, but you come off very wise about it. I'm just letting you, like, you are
an extremely
educated person. It's not like you're not preaching to the choir, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I think that, there's a lot that goes into it, but definitely, and I still reflect on it now, you know, and I think like when I was, you know, 15, 16, you know, sort of really into music at a young age, when I discovered a new song or a new artist, it definitely hit differently than it does now. And, you know, a lot of people just say that has to do with age, I think, in terms of like, oh yeah, well, you know, you've heard and seen more stuff, so it's you know, less emotional, less exciting, you know. But what I think it might be more so than that is that when you're that age, you're so far removed, you know, from the idea that you need to be productive in that way or do something that can make you money somehow, that you're really just like feeling the pure magic of the music or the art or whatever it is that you're consuming, you know. It comes off as much more magical in that sense. Whereas, you know, you get older, because I'm 23 now, and I find myself sometimes struggling to enjoy music the same way. And I think it's because my brain has been conditioned at this point to sort of hyper-analyze every element of the music, you know, and like, okay, what chords are going on here? What's the songwriter saying here? What's this production style? Like, oh, they use this instrument? You know, it's sort of like breaking down the art into like these like effable things, right? And like components that really, like, they do exist, but they also don't, you know? Like, it's just like the way the music makes you feel that's important, and like the sort of upfront magic of it all. And when you try and understand it, you think that you're becoming, you try and understand it out of a desire to then turn that understanding into being able to make art that is similarly impactful or like commercially successful or whatever, something that you think will connect with other people. But in doing so, you're totally stripping away, you know, the magical element of it. So I think that for me to make anything that I like now, and which I was able to do with the last EP, because I was in that headspace that I was when I was like 15 or 16 or whatever, and which I have to enter into now if I'm going to be writing or recording music. To do that, I have to be able to just say, it's not about the chord progression. It's not about the names of the notes. It's not about even the words that I'm saying fully, you know? It's much more just about the feeling of everything. The second you try and put it into words, you're diminishing what it is, which is just pure magic, you know?
Dude, you said it best yourself, man. That, like, I think that is extremely applicable to anyone creating. If you can just go back to the basics and not care about what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
Dude, you're doing great, man. I support everything else that you're doing, dude. I totally believe in the Cool Hand Jacks project, and I am absolutely a fan. And I definitely need to order merch because I'm pissed that Niall has some, and I don't.
So. I mean, yeah, but I think that, so with the visuals, so those were, that's what I realized the EP was about. I was like, it's about enjoying nothing. It's about basking in nothingness and the value of that in and of itself. And then from there, I wanted to do my dream was to do like a 20, or I think it was like a 15 minute, like short film even, that ties in all the songs and tells more of this narrative story. And I even started writing it, and it made a lot more sense cohesively. And that was sort of the goal. But at that point, there was no real way for me to pull it off. And I couldn't pay for it. And I knew people who would have helped me out, but I probably couldn't pay them much. And it just seemed sort of like impossible. But thankfully, that was part of the cool part of working with Spirit Goth is I sent them the Backseat Swinging video, which was the one with me in the car in the sky.
Yeah.
That one I made on my own when I was in Texas during like the very beginning of quarantine. And that video is pretty self-explanatory. You know, it's kind of like a silly take on it. But the idea is still there that you're just like chilling in the back seat while like life goes by, and like that's cool, you know, whatever. But I was able to send that to them too, and they really liked it, and were like, hey, yeah, like let's make music videos for everything. Like let's make music videos for every song, and you can work with whoever you want, like, you know. So that was great. And I ended up enlisting my roommate / really good friend, whose name is James Wyatt, goes by James Baby, for directing music videos, and we were able to co-direct these three videos. So really just having like, I was really grateful for that, like being able to have this like full creative control over the visuals too. And I've always been super into that stuff, but like never like knew what I was doing, you know. It's always been like, okay, let's try this. But to be able to work with like my good friend too, who like knows what he's doing, because he's a filmmaker. And
but even the Sunshine Brothers videos were great. Like, I feel like they have such a cohesive thing that makes them Sunshine Brothers music videos.
Thanks. And yeah, they were fun to make.
Did you direct those as well?
So I directed the So Bad to Me video, which was just, like, literally shot in my iPhone with, like, different effects. And that one was... I like the way that one came out because it really captured the essence of, like, what we were doing at that point. And then the one for In Your Dreams, I had sort of the concept, but it was shot by a friend of mine from BU. So it was sort of a joint effort. But so for these, we got to write out the treatments and figure out what we were going to do for each. And I'm glad you liked the James Dean thing. I was worried that people were going to be confused by it.
No, it's very cool, man.
Believe it or not, a lot of people don't know who James Dean is.
It was also funny in hindsight because I do remember, and again, this is just to boost your ego on every level that I possibly can, where I remember the first time we met was a show we were playing together. I think we were in either Cambridge or like it was like Midtown or whatever in Boston. Or
We played in JP at
JP. Yeah, that's Midway Mid-City. Cafe. That's right. That's right. Not Midtown. It was Midway Cafe. And I pulled Niall aside and I was like, he's too attractive to be in a band because that's not fair. Like, it's not fair that we, as like ugly people, are also competing to be in bands, and he already is that much more attractive. And then I was like, dude, and Niall was like, dude, you have issues, man.
You and Niall are definitely not anywhere. Yeah, you and Niall are very, very attractive human beings. You and Niall are both very handsome fellas. I don't think you have anything, man, to worry about with in terms of handsomeness in music.
But no, I thought the James Dean thing was sick. Is all I'm trying to say. And those visuals for those videos, man, were awesome.
Thanks. That was James, my roommate's idea. As well. He was like, all right, you know, this is a video about not feeling like everyone else or not wanting to feel like everyone else when you are like everyone else. So, like, let's just make you impersonate an impersonator on Hollywood Boulevard and fail really fucking bad at it. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's perfect.
I think that's hilarious, man. I dig it.
It was super fun to shoot.
And now you have a video coming out tomorrow, which is last Wednesday for those listening.
Yeah, that's for Wanna Watch You Move. And this video is definitely, like, I try and think of them together in my head. This one is kind of like a playful, fun one. It's like just sort of commemorating all the places and people in LA that, like, have sort of shaped this weird time for James and I. And yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but I think it'll be a fun one, I hope. I don't know. I had fun making all of them, so I'm biased.
Well, yo, I've kept you for an hour, and I just want to say, dude, thank you for sitting down and, like, talking, and I really appreciate it. I am a huge fan, and I really just support everything you're doing, man. It's really, really cool stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, no, thank you so much. I'm excited to hear what is the Amy incident. Are you guys still recording or what?
We got some stuff coming out.
We're still
working on a lot. We're all virtual. We're all over the place. So
nice.
We're figuring things out.
Are you in Massachusetts long term right now, or just?
I'm in New York long term. I'm here till Thanksgiving, so I'm chilling. Okay. But yeah, that's why I'm just, like, logging in interviews right now, because I'm quarantining, so starting next Friday, I'll have an interview every Friday, which is good, and there's one coming out this Friday, and then yours is next. So I'm just, like, getting them down. But if you have any other artists that I want to deep dive in that need an interview or a podcast or any spread in the Northeast, man, let them know.
Yeah,
I'd love to meet anyone who's associated with you. So.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I'll let them know. I'll be back like around Christmas time, so I'm hoping to see Niall. And
hell yeah, dude! We'll all get together and we'll have a social distance hang, man.
Yeah, I'd be very down if you're around.
Let's do it.
All right,
and
man.
I'll be in LA in April.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah.
So I will definitely hit you up. So don't be freaked out if you get, hey, it's Morgan. I'm in LA.
Nah, definitely hit me up, man. You're always welcome here.
All right, dude. Thank you so much again. I really appreciate it. Video is going to be out by Wednesday. Check it out. Check out all the other videos. Cool and Jax, you're absolutely the man. Thanks, Jax.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, dude.
Take it easy. Have a good one.
You too.